Hello again, this is Gary Williams from the EFTuniverse.com, and now we look at the art of EFT and its delivery. And Emma Roberts says that it's important to use the client's own words and also important not to put your own opinions onto the clients, but just to let them describe how they're feeling and also feed their words back to them. It's also important to observe and listen very carefully. You can also sometimes work out the answer to the client's problems within the first 10 minutes of a session just by listening. Emma also talks about training and learning how to develop rapport and other skills, and shares some magic questions that you may want to use within a session, and talks about getting out of your own way. Also, Emma talks about being gentle and taking your time with a session and working on yourself. Gillian Whiteman talks about how clients can pick up on the practitioner's feelings and any incongruity that may be occurring during the session, and also how we need to be totally present during a session and honest with our clients about how we feel, even if we feel challenged. Gillian also talks about working on your own issues before working on your clients, and how taking responsibility for ourselves will give us insights into the work and how our clients may be feeling. Gillian also says that some sessions may be a little scary and not always gentle, and by working on your own issues, this will give you the ability to go into areas that you would not normally tackle. Andy Bryce talks about using the right language when working with others, and how he seems to use clean language naturally, and how he is able to do that through his experience. Here's more now from Andy.
Well, Gary, I think for the most part, my languaging is almost unconscious. I'm not aware of what I do. I get a lot of feedback that people feel gotten heard. So I think that as we learn, I'm probably more kinesthetic and intuitive. And I've learned to, say things that come up for me, whereas there are people who work with and trained with different things such as clean language and other systems and models from NLP that are really clinical in how the language is presented. And I think there is a real art to it, and I'm probably one of the least effective in who to ask for that, because it's so ingrained that I don't actually know how I do it or how I get to say the right thing. I just trust what's coming up for me.
Right. So do you think you do some of those things maybe naturally, or that you just get results anyway?
Well, from my certifications and trainings and feedback from people, other masters and that kind of thing, they say, yeah, you that I do use it, but I just don't define it, and it wasn't that I was trained to do it. So I think some people are oriented around knowing exactly why and what to say and how to say it, and other people are using their intuitive abilities, and that's getting out of your mind. It's getting out of the conscious into the sort of letting it come through you instead of by you. And I've found that that by letting the questioning or the words come out rather than try and make them happen, they're more effective. So there's probably or possibly a balance between the learning study of languaging and the intuitive allowing of language.
And does that come?
That would be the best.
And does that come with experience?
Yeah, I think so. I know that 25 years ago, I was working with studying channeling and working with connecting with my inner wisdom with a group of very experienced people, and I was comparing myself negatively because some of them would see things or hear, so they'd be they were just getting the words they were going to say or reading them off something. But for me, I'm kinesthetic, and when I get a feeling or words come to me, I just learn to say them. And and over time began to trust that if something was coming up, it was appropriate, even if I didn't consciously understand why.
Yeah. So sometimes you may get, like, you're going to deliver a few words to somebody, but you don't know why you're going to do that, but it just comes.
Right. And when I first started working, I started working with my hands. I created a bodywork, breakthrough bodywork, that was designed to remove and to release stored emotions. And my teachers told me that would happen. And so I was always really focused on that. But things would pop into my head, and then I'd go, well, I don't know how this relates, so I wouldn't ask. So I got used to asking the question, and people were going, well, how did you know to ask that? Couldn't tell you, but there it was, and it was right. So I learned over time, and that was my strength. So other people have different combinations, and we all have probably the same pool of things to draw from, but some people are stronger visually, auditorily, kinesthetic, and but I think as long as we're compassionate and establish rapport, almost anyone can work with any client.
And do you have to learn to trust that, in a sense, that you can do that?
Well, I did, yeah. And I would say that the proof would be in the responses from the clients, because if the practitioner's ego is in the way and they want to be right, well then, you know, or it's the same thing as they would think to ask, well, it's probably still the conscious mind that's trying to run or control the session, and there's a state in which letting that come through you takes practice. And, yeah, it's usually interesting because it's not something you would have thought of.
Right. And so it's getting out of your own way, in a sense.
Really, exactly that. And that takes practice, I think.
My thanks there to Andy Bryce. And now Emma Roberts talks more about the art of EFT and its delivery and using the right words and other useful information that you can use during a session.
I think the most important thing to do is to use your client's words. So don't put your words onto them. What you think don't say what you think they're feeling. For instance, if you see a shift in somebody, don't say, oh, you look like you were really sad at that point. You just go, what happened then? Continual sort of active questioning, exploring, but without putting your own stuff, I suppose, for want of a better word, onto the client.
Right.
So feeding them back their own words. Often clients will say, you know, how do you know I was thinking that? Well, actually, they'll have just said it. If you just literally use the words that they use, they're often unaware of what they're saying.
Hmm.
So, you know, as a client, you can't get your words wrong.
Right.
And as a therapist, you have to actively listen so that you get their words right.
Right. And you talk about actively listening. And I think I've heard you say before that, you know, you can actually work out the answer to the client's problem within the first 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. It's all in the first 10 minutes. It's sort of, if you really listen to what they're saying, it's not just listening, actually, it's observing, it's, you know, looking at the physiology, working out how that, you know, what's going on for them, what seems to be congruent, what seems to be a mismatch. And that doesn't mean to say that your client's lying to you. It just means that it's an unconscious mismatch going on. They give you everything you need to know.
Right.
You can't tell them that, but it's, you know, it's worth, and obviously our job is not to give them any answers anyway. Our job is to help them develop and explore and come up with their own solutions. And the unconscious always has the solution.
Yeah.
It just does deliver it. More often than not in the first 10 minutes. I would never hand it back to the client like that.
Right. And you talk about a mismatch. Have you got a kind of example of what a mismatch might be?
Well, I mean, a classic one is a client who comes in, slumps into the chair, says they feel fine. You know, that's the sort of thing.
Right.
When the body, the physiology, the unconscious cues are not matching the words.
Right. So, I mean, if they're looking really anxious and they say that they're not really anxious, they're calm about things, is that a mismatch as well?
Yes, it is. Yeah, absolutely. And it's not about catching them out or thinking they're lying or anything else, but it's about just noticing how they're processing, how they interpret things, how they translate their feelings.
Right. And can you kind of go on workshops and things and improve your ability to be an observer in that sense?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what our IET diploma training teachers, for instance. It's very much, it's all part of developing rapport skills. These are fundamental practitioner skills that everybody needs to have. I mean, you can do it by sitting on the bus and watching people's body language and stuff. You don't have to go on a course, but it's more structured. It's more structured way of doing it on the course, because you know we're not their friends. We're not having you sit down and have a chat like you would listen to your best mate. Where when I say actively, it is an active process. We're there to see how we can best be of use to them, without advising or giving them what we think the answer might be. And that's what friends are for, but. You know, to truly understand the person sitting in front of you and to truly get connected to their energy system, you have to listen to more than just the words.
Right. And are there kind of questions, you know, really like magic questions that we can ask people to get the information we need?
Absolutely. I mean, we've got two packs of cards, actually, which have powerful questions on them for amazing, you know, amazing change. Yes, I think ask the right question. It'll take you straight to the core issue. And, you know, and Gary Craig's great on questions, too. Things like, you know, what stops you getting what you want? What's the positive intention? You know, I think one of the Byron Katie questions is fantastic, actually. Is that really true? How can you know that that's really true?
Yeah.
And once people start with, we get so used to our stories and how we're churning them out, and actually our friends tend not to challenge us on them. They try to help. If you gently challenge and question people, there often things collapse just in that process alone. You know, and then Gary's got questions like, if there were an emotional contributor to this pain, for instance, what might that be? You know, and if somebody doesn't know the answer to a question, that's absolutely fine. They won't consciously know it, but you ask them just to guess. Often the unconscious mind will deliver anyway, and if not, it'll still be working on it, even, you know, even when you move on to something completely different.
Right. Right, so do those questions then kind of enter into the unconscious mind and bring out the answers you need?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, and you say you've got them on cards, so could somebody get those cards and kind of, well, you know, even play cards or browse them?
Yeah, absolutely, you can play cards. We've got people who just sort of get the best clients just to pick a card, and whatever the question they pick, it tends to land. It's very bizarre that, you know, so they're just a selection of cards for getting to core issues, for getting rapport skills sort of honed, those sorts of things, starting the process of change. So they go through four categories, basically. It's one suit, which is for getting started, one for finding core issues, one for getting specific, and then the final suit in that is for testing, which, of course, is vital in our work.
Right.
You know, we have to test our work.
So are these questions to test to make sure that, you know, we're getting the results as such?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what kind of questions, what sort of thing do you ask then in that situation?
How would I know that these, you know, if I meet you in a year's time, how will I know that these changes have held and get them to tell you what they're doing?
Right.
You know, asking them what if they had that change in their life, what would that mean to them? So that you get the kind of the clear purpose behind it.
Yeah.
What would happen if you did do it? Is it possible for you to have to net your life now? You know, how do you know what's happening? All those sorts of questions that we often test. You run that movie again and tell me, you know, if it's any change.
Right.
But and, you know, classic testing so questions, I suppose. What's written on your walls that stops you having it now? It's a core issue question.
Yeah. So it's important to kind of research questions like that and kind of own them, if you like, so you can just produce them during a session.
Absolutely. They need to get into your unconscious. I mean, I collect questions. But, you know, I've been doing it for a long time, so just kind of pour off my tongue. I don't think I'd be quite a good barrister.
Right. Is it got to sound natural then when you're delivering them to people as such?
Well, conversational, yes. Absolutely.
Right.
Conversational, but purposeful. I mean, from the minute somebody that enters your practice until the minute they leave, every word you utter has to be purposeful. Everything you do has to be purposeful from hello onwards.
Right. Right. And with all the experience that you've had and the learnings that you've had, what has been the most important thing, do you think, that you've learned, you know, whilst doing this work?
Well, respect the client. The client always knows, always do have the answer. And also to allow silence as well, not that need to have to fill in every gap, every second. Sometimes people just need that time. It's amazing if you just let them have that silence. Often, just that much more than you're comfortable with, suddenly they'll come up with the answer or the solution or a change or, you know, cognitive shift or whatever.
So not to be in too much of a hurry if you are a practitioner then, and to just to sit back and allow things to develop.
Obviously, to get out of your own way.
Right. And that is something that can be hard, can it, for some people to actually to do that? Or
well, it can be, especially initially. I mean, it becomes a lot easier, obviously, with practice and also with the amount of self work you do.
Right.
So that has to be, you know, the other modalities called supervision or mentoring. I would, this the EFT, I think it's more of an internal process. We need to, as well as be discussing what we're doing with our clients, we need to be on a continual journey working on ourselves to continue so that we can be a clear channel, if you like, for the work, because we're not doing the healing work, it's just coming through us.
Right. And do we need to kind of turn up, you know, in the right way, as it were, when we are working with people?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yes, I mean, our own stuff, whatever's happening in our lives. It's not to say that if you're going through stuff, you can't work with clients, because absolutely you can, as long as you have an awareness to work with yourself at the same time. But the second a client steps into your practice, your stuff just has to go out of the door. It just doesn't belong in there, in that relationship.
Right.
And actually, you know, it's not difficult, but it's a discipline when you start, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's also combined with the kind of wanting to get everything right and wanting to do it absolutely perfectly for that client in that moment in 20 seconds and every 1 minute wonder or whatever it is in 60 seconds. But life, you know, we're more complex than that. It doesn't work like that. So it's more about taking the time, allowing the client their time, and staying with being absolutely 100% with your client for the length of that process,
right.
that session.
My thanks there to Emma Roberts, and now we have more useful information from Gillian Whiteman talking about the art of delivery and also building trust and safety for your clients.
Yes, absolutely. I think any sense of feeling unsure, any sense of feeling even perhaps challenged by the work, any sense of not feeling confident in your abilities is very easily transferred to vulnerable people.
And
they're often coming, particularly if there is a background of trauma, particularly from early childhood, they are coming even with a sense of distrust already.
Yeah.
They're already looking out for reasons not to trust. They can be coming almost with an attitude of, I'm here to do the work, but there may be a part of them that's just not sure about that idea. So they can actually tell incongruity. They can tell when people are not fully there very easily.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It is important for us to, first of all, be very sure about why we're doing the work, why we want to do the work, what kind of work we're doing. And if there is any nervousness in us, any unsurety, then that's up to us to take care of.
Right.
Because that can easily be transferred to our clients.
Yeah. If our heart's in the right place, though, can we kind of... Is that a dangerous thing sometimes that, you know, our heart's in the right place, but we try to work in areas maybe that, you know, we're not skilled enough to?
I know in my case, just thinking about certain areas where I felt maybe that I have been triggered, what is very helpful to my clients and very respectful, I think, is to actually let them know what's going on for me, which might sound an unusual thing, but when we know, and many of my clients have actually shared this with me, that they know when things are going on.
Right.
So at the beginning of a session, even if I've not had a good day, if stuff's been going on in my life, and there has been a few ups and downs with bereavement and different things going, you know, we have our own personal problems to deal with. If I'm not settled in myself, and it might not even be anything to do with the client or the session, maybe stuff that's still current for me, they can often pick that up. They can even hear it in my voice sometimes.
Yeah.
And like a little child is saying to their mum, wanting to know this isn't my fault, the clients actually need to know that too. So sometimes it has been appropriate for me to say, actually, I am this is a trigger for me, but this is my responsibility, I'll take care of it. They appreciate that.
Right.
It's very respectful. Noticing, so I can notice when I've perhaps not been totally able to take what they've said, not be able to be totally present. I can notice that in my own energy system. That's my responsibility to deal with that. It's not their problem.
Right.
But they can, because they notice it, and actually often they've thanked me because, maybe just a small example, I can give you. Somebody made a statement about using drugs recreationally and that that wasn't a problem. And in that moment, I know that I had that within me because in my own personal life, my sister did get involved with drugs and that was part of her mental health problems and it caused us a lot of problems. So immediately I was going to, drugs are dangerous. There's never a safe way to use drugs. That was my judgment. My stuff had come in there. I didn't say anything at the time, but the next session I said, look, I just need to know. And that, for those few moments, that's what came up for me. I've done some work on that. And he said, I really appreciate that. I knew in those few seconds, for the first time in all the time I worked with you, that I didn't feel safe. For just a little while, I didn't feel safe. I felt that judgment. And so the fact that I had actually been able to just let him know what had happened brought back safety in our relationship.
Right.
Because to work with people that have been through trauma, safety is the most important thing. So it is helpful. It's necessary for us to notice when we're being triggered and deal with it. It can also be helpful just to let people know that that's happened.
Right. And does that then give you the idea then that, you know, you need to go and work on that yourself as well because it's come up as such?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When if I'm aware that something has come up that's reminding me of issues that perhaps I'm still uncomfortable with, then that's my signal. That's my signal that it's time for me to, if I can't clear it myself and if it's still there and I've maybe thought I've worked on it and I'm still getting triggered, then it is maybe time to dig a little deeper with somebody's help.
Right.
And so that's how I feel I can do this work. By being continually aware of when it is my stuff that's being triggered. And I see that as an investment in my business, not only for myself, but for my clients. If I can take responsibility for when I'm being triggered or when I'm finding that I'm at the end of the day, I've been drained because it's felt a lot for my system to take.
Yeah.
Looking after myself is important for me and for my clients and ultimately for my business. But it also allows me to share that process a little with them and let them see the humanity. It helps them a lot
right.
to know that they're not, because it's not only therapists that feel that we've got to have it all sorted. It is most people. Most people feel that they should have it all sorted, particularly when we've been surviving life. And I know that from the other side, as the client, I feel embarrassed and ashamed sometimes when I'm making an appointment because I think, not even just because I'm a therapist, I think because as a human being, I should be able to cope with this. I've survived this far, I should be able to cope. So you are putting yourself in a very vulnerable position often when you're picking up that phone.
Right, so that's why it's so important then to really do the work on yourself, to get the experience as such.
Absolutely, it's important. It's important to know what it feels like to be sitting by the phone, picking up the courage to make the phone call.
Mm.
It's important to know what it feels like to feel like you know, got irritable bowel syndrome before the session. It's important to know what it feels like to think, what the hell am I doing this for?
Right.
And it's important to know what it feels like to pick up the phone and go, actually, you know what, I'm fine. Because that happens a lot. People phone in a vulnerable state, and by the time they come to pick up the phone for their session, they've got their cool guy back.
Right.
They're quite convinced that they're fine, and they don't even know why they made the appointment.
Mm, a bit like going to the doctors, I suppose, isn't it? And you get into reception, and suddenly you're well again.
Suddenly, absolutely.
Yeah, placebo.
And it's just that coping mechanism, you know, firing back up again, because it is difficult. It is difficult to admit that we're vulnerable and that we need help.
And what other areas have you learned, you know, as you've been getting the experience of working with people, what have you found to be the most useful aspects of that?
Of doing my own work, of getting my own work. The most useful aspects for me personally are I am now absolutely, utterly 100% convinced that no matter how scary it can look, no matter how triggered somebody is, and maybe I know that often we try to market EFT as being a safe, gentle therapy, but sometimes that's not the case. And for moments, it can feel very scary when you're maybe being swamped. You're having an emotional overwhelm.
Right.
I've been there. I've been there at times where I've just thought, oh, I could die from this feeling. I might die from this feeling. And I know that by somebody just calmly sitting, tapping, I am going to get through it. I've always got through it. So I know I can sit with people that I've even said, I feel like ripping my skin off. I want to jump out the window. And I can say, I've got you. I'm here. This is the sit. We're here. We're going to get through this. And because I know it, and I feel it in every cell of my body, I know it.
Right.
It allows them that they can feel the safety in that. And the only way I know it is because I've been there. And when I hadn't known it, and when I've not been there, I've not been able to do this, the work that I do. I haven't always worked as a therapist doing my own work. I started at the beginning as one of those therapists who have the tool to fix other people, but was too scared to do it myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a very successful business. I did help people to a degree, but there were places that there was only so far I could go. Another very interesting thing that I've noticed, which fascinates me, is that I can have worked with people a few years ago, and I now recognize that I've actually gone to areas where, in retrospect, looking back, I couldn't have taken them because I hadn't done it myself. And I'm not kidding, within even days, they're back on the phone.
Right.
For another appointment, when I've cleared my stuff. You know, the weird way that this works. these clients come back when I've done my stuff, and I can take them to where they need to go.
Right. I mean, also I hear a lot of audios, you know, on the internet and everything else, and it kind of gives a very pleasant feel of EFT, doesn't it? A very kind of easy way of doing it, and everything's very simple and everything else. How do you feel about the way that that's kind of presented?
I've never had an experience of that personally. I think, and I know I'm going to be talking in maybe other, have opportunities to talk about my experience more in depth. I've never had an experience of EFT being easy for me, and I don't think I've ever really attracted the clients that one or two come and it's the one session wonder, and it does seem easy, and I have had those clients, and that's a lovely experience. But on the most part, since I've started doing this work, and I think that happens, that we attract the kind of people that we can handle.
Right.
Largely, I think, or that we have an understanding of or an empathy with. I've always, right from the beginning, found that it's a little bit tougher. And when I first started learning EFT, watched the DVDs, my jaw was dropping with the wonder of it all, the simplicity of it all. It looked so easy. I bought into that 100%. I used to tell my clients, look, hey, we can go in there, we can get the memory, you'll be fine. That I had to do my own work to realise it didn't work like that. But right at the beginning, when I was just learning and I was doing my, you know, the EFT certification the way it used to be, where we'd watch the DVDs and, you know, tick the boxes, somebody came, I was also practicing other modalities, somebody came who was in near kidney failure.
And
I did sense, this is huge. I'm not sure if I've got the experience, but she said, please, you know, please work with me because you're the only person that's ever touched me without my skin burning.
Right.
I feel safe. And I said, well, you know, I've learned this great new technique. It's the only thing I can think of to try, because she told me she wasn't able to drink water. She just literally couldn't drink water, and obviously her kidneys were suffering. I brought in the glass of water and I said, with the EFT, we need to drink water for it to work. So maybe we can start tapping about why you don't want to drink the water. And she collapsed.
Right.
She literally collapsed on the floor. And I won't go into the details of the trauma, but there was a massive trauma, and it took me 3 hours of all I knew was the basics of tell the story and the movie technique. And that wasn't even doable. I just had to keep tapping, and bit by bit this story came out. And at the end, she did get some relief, but I was totally traumatized by the experience. I hadn't even begun to realize, you know, how people could be triggered into their, you know, traumas by just sights and sounds. That was the beginning of me really, that's what prompted me to really learn about trauma and, right. and to research and study. And because I realized that just the tool of EFT wasn't enough. I needed to understand what was going on.
Right.
So I think I got kind of thrown into the deep end.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. through that experience, you went to seek other information.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's been an endlessly fascinating journey. And I suppose perhaps I do come across as with a strong message of maybe just to learning how to do EFT is great, but if we are wanting to work with serious issues, we also need to be educated and understand what's going on.
Right. And as you said earlier on, you were talking about, you know, actually working with other people. Is that the same if you're a therapist or if you're, you know, mastering EFT as such, you still need to work with other people?
Well, I don't think I'm alone. I absolutely don't think I'm alone in saying that. Most people that are doing the big work do feel that they need support. So yes, certainly we need, I think we all need somewhere to go when we're maybe just a little unsure, because sometimes we do feel quite alone with this work, and it's good to have resources to go to for maybe backup. It's good to recognize when we're maybe on the edges of where we don't belong, and then maybe be given some resources to help us to do the work. But certainly working on our own responses, our own fears. And I think absolutely if we're wanting to work with trauma, we need to be very, very okay, feel totally, totally undisturbed by people talking about horrific things. Not undisturbed in I'm okay with this, not like this isn't a problem for me, but so that we are not getting triggered, our heart's not kind of, you know, our body's not responding to people talking, using certain words.
Right.
And it is one of the things I think just tapping on, making sure that we can hear certain sexual references, certain words, certain practices, and just being aware that people can do really bad things to other people. And for us to also know that also have the experience of kind of clearing our really bad things and knowing that it's absolutely possible to come out the other side.
Right. So there's a lot of learning there, isn't there, to be had. And maybe someone that's just starting out might feel, you know, they've listened to how easy EFT is, and now they're finding out that it's actually, there's quite a lot to learn there. Would they be a bit disappointed, you know, in that sense? Could they actually get to the level of work that you're doing? Is that possible?
I think it is possible, because I started off, that's where I was. I was that person. I was that person that thought this should be easy. I was that person that thought I should be sorted. And life showed me that that wasn't the case. We've been through 5 years of really quite big trauma in my family, with bereavements, with mental illness. Both of my parents had early onset dementia. They died horrific deaths. I had all sorts of hospital blunders. In the last 5 years, I've had a lot of hard stuff to deal with,
right.
That's when I realized I'm not sorted at all, and it was probably one of the best, you know, it's been hard to go through, but it's been a huge learning curve for me to realize what really drives our behavior, what really drives our stress. I did start off as one of those, I was almost a food Nazi. I was a nutritional therapist, and I was sitting there saying, this is what you've got to do, just give up wheat, give up milk, give up chocolate. You know, I've done it, you can do it, because that's where I had been in the past. This is how I started my own healing journey, by changing my diet, and I almost did it like a religion, and it was the focus of my life, and I terrorized people with my knowledge.
Right.
So it was a good thing for me in some ways, although if I could have a choice, I wouldn't like to have done this, but it's been a good thing for me to really have empathy. I know what it feels like to have all the nutritional knowledge in the world and be stuffing Mars bars in my face before I have to go into the hospital. The equivalent of having a cigarette or a joint or whatever, it was my quick fix.
Yeah.
Because when you're in that place, there's no logic. There's no, when you're in that place of fear, terror, there is no logic there. You're just doing whatever you can do to survive that moment.
Right.
So knowing that, living through that and being helped through that has helped me. to get to where I am today, to be able to support people in those situations. I remember a couple, 2 or 3 years ago, I went down to London to do a trauma and abuse workshop with Sue and Emma. And they introduced us to the tsunami technique.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if many other people have heard of it. What you do is you use a news report. Your response to a news report to help you get into your stuff. And they said that they developed this because they were doing a level 3 workshop and nobody could come up with a memory. And I thought at the time, I wonder if that's because they all thought they should have, because I've been doing this for years and I'm still coming up with stuff. I wonder if they all sat there and thought they were too afraid to put up their hand and say, I'm not totally sorted.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great technique, but I think maybe I work with a lot of therapists, probably because of my honesty.
Yeah.
I think they're attracted to working with me because they know that I have made my vulnerability open, so they feel safe. But they can't, a lot of them say, I can't believe I've been tapping on this. I thought this was sorted.
Mm.
There's still a well of pain there. And often they've been working 2-3 years with EFT, and I'm the first person that they've done any self therapy with.
Right.
And I think they're going to be far better therapists now.
Yeah, yeah. And are we really ever sorted, though? I mean, there's always things to work on, isn't there?
I think there's always going to be stuff to work with.
Mm. But I think I heard a description of it being like, you know, being the captain of your own ship as such. You know, if you kind of get pushed around in the waves, don't you? And that's life. But yes. At least if you're the captain of your ship, you know kind of where you're going. You can get back on track, can't you?
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. So I always see it as my next healing opportunity. I don't see it as a failure. I see it as my next opportunity to clear some more stuff.
Right.
Or be the captain of my ship. This has come up for me, and great, I'll clear it. If I can't clear it myself, then I'll make an appointment with somebody.
Because in a sense, without EFT, we have a boat that hasn't got a captain as such. And you know, and if the storm comes, you know, we don't really know what to do and how to get back on track again, do we?
And sometimes it's sink or swim, and you're kind of bobbing around.
Yeah. You know?
And I've certainly been in those places as well. And even, I'll be honest, even knowing EFT after my sister committed suicide,
right. There
were still limiting beliefs. There was still this idea that I should be suffering because she was dead and she didn't get help. And I spent a year without tapping,
right,
just surviving.
Yeah,
my business collapsed. I'd already realized that I wasn't in a place. I think what was happening, because we were going through quite a bit of difficulty, clients were coming with the problems, and I was almost sitting there with a kind of, you think that's a problem attitude,
right,
which is not going to be good for business. we have to learn everybody's got their own, everybody's pain is their pain. You can't compare experience. That's certainly the place that I come from now, but at that point that made me unsafe as a therapist, and I recognized that, so I knew that I had to withdraw from that arena and sort myself out. And it did take me a year to recover and to start the healing process, and that is absolutely ongoing, still ongoing. I still find things are coming up about that experience.
But
it takes time sometimes. We're like onions.
Yeah, but with the help of EFT, you're probably in a better place now, aren't you, that you would have been if you hadn't have done the tapping.
My goodness. I honestly to goodness, I think without EFT, I would probably be in the psychiatric hospital with her, if I was to be honest. I can't. I actually can't imagine getting through all of this. And I know that I am physically and emotionally healthy. I know that I'm... within that, there are times where I feel like I'm a mess and I'm crying. But what I've learned along the way, and what's been important for me to learn, is that emotional freedom is actually, this is big learning, the freedom to feel your emotions when they're appropriate. And that maybe does include the space to be, having a bad day.
Yeah, I am sad.
I am missing them. It does feel too much.
Mm.
And if I give myself that space, then I can come through it.
So do you think, you know, in a sense, some people are going around looking for this ultimate cure of everything, in a way, and that's not really real, in a sense?
I wonder just thinking about myself, I think perhaps that could be the case. I did think, I did feel that it should be the ultimate cure, or that there would be, there was a feeling at the beginning, I have now got the answer to my, to life. And I don't think, I think it's a tool. It's a tool right. that I can use when I'm stuck. But there's lots of other things that we need to do, but it's very much an ongoing process. And EFT, yes, for one memory, if you can totally have peace and calm on one memory, that is a 1 minute wonder. That is a miracle. Mm. You can have a lifetime of, you know, for some of my clients just thinking, I don't even know how they're walking on the planet. So much has happened, and that is going to take time.
Right.
It's going to take time. And it might be over a period of years. But in my case, right from the beginning, I've had relief and peace, and it's been a progressive thing, and it just gets better and better, and I can do more and more. But I couldn't do it all at once. It was impossible, and B, I don't think I could have sustained that, and C, I would have scared everybody to death.
Right.
Because not only it's not just us that's doing the work, we affect everybody around us when we're doing this work. And the status quo changes in families. So when one person starts to heal, that can be challenging for the rest of the family.
Right.
Because often within family there is a dynamic that goes on.
Hmm.
And it can be challenging when maybe two hurt people have got together and they're finding there might be conflict there, but the there is also understanding on some level. When one makes a decision to heal, it can be challenging. And that's what happened in my case. It was my husband that got he started training in cranial sacral therapy, and he started doing this healing, and I was utterly challenged by that. I didn't want to know anything about childhood trauma. I didn't want to know anything about inner child healing. I didn't want to know about my emotions affecting me. I was in pain and I was depressed, and it was obvious because I was in pain. And even when my doctor was suggesting it could be my past, I absolutely wasn't having it. So I also understand that need for denial, that terror of looking at it, that need to just keep the lid on things. And it was because he was healing and changing that started to get, I started to notice, and it started to get uncomfortable. And
yeah.
It's almost a feeling like I had to join him or get left behind.
Right.
So it wasn't necessarily right at the beginning my choice. It was a decision I made because I recognized that things from my family were not good.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to continue the trauma cycle. Because you can see it going back in families. And I did come to a place where I thought, it has to stop here, and I have to do this, even right. though I don't want to.
And have you any kind of last thoughts for people that are just starting out in EFT and are thinking of, you know, taking that journey as such?
I just think my last thought is, you're just about to take a wonderful journey.
Right.
And it might be, for me, it's been a bit like a roller coaster. And sometimes I've thought, please, don't want to do this anymore. But you go up and you come down and you just keep going, and it does get easier when you do see yourself. I got a lovely email in, actually, from a client with multiple cirrhosis who found me. She felt drawn to work with me, but she also has been using EFT for herself, for her own process. And what she said was that she's just finding that it was a scary journey to start with. When she realized that she was going to have to look at things, it was a scary journey, but the further she's on this journey, the more life is opening up to her, and the more she's attracting. So she did find the thought daunting, but now she's just finding that she can tap anything that challenges her, anything that she feels she doesn't want to do or she can't do. And I think where I am now, from where I started, where I am now, I look at life and I think, there's something that I can't do. There's two things here. It's either I don't know how to do it yet and I can learn, or I just don't want to do it. But I don't think there's any such thing as can't. If somebody Right. else can do it, I've got the tools now to help me do that. And that my life has, the things that I'm doing now, I couldn't even begin to imagine a few years ago, you know, Right. in terms of even physical things, windsurfing, skiing, blackruns, things that, and I've had to tap every single step of the way to do that.
Right.
Right from, you know, so many limiting beliefs, so many voices in my head telling me I can't, I shouldn't, it's not possible. And now I'm just doing unbelievable things.
Right.
Possibilities being endless. But yeah, it's, you have to get on the road and you just have to keep on going.
Right. And finally, if someone's, you know, just taking this up and they're thinking of working on their own issues and maybe they're a bit traumatic, the issues that they're looking at here, mm-hmm. would it be more sense for them to actually work with somebody rather than struggle along on their own?
I would say so. I think it's probably the best investment they could make in themselves and in their business. But what I would suggest that they do is to take the time. I think there are lots of people that can do EFT, but one of the great things about EFT is that with Skype and telephone, the world is your oyster. You don't have to work with somebody who's in the town just because they're there. You can work with anybody all over the world. So it's really worth seeing who you're drawn to, reading, looking at websites, reading, listening to different therapists. And in my experience, when I feel drawn to somebody, that's when it's always worked the best for me. You know, so it's worth just taking a little bit of time to find somebody that you, and what you need is that feeling of, with this person, I can be a mess and it's okay. Right. I can be vulnerable. I can be in that place where I am receiving help. And finding somebody that you can feel truly comfortable with okay. is a gift, you know, and it's worth keeping looking for that.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Gillian Whiteman there. And you can find out more information about Gillian and her work at EastNEUK, that's EastNEUKtherapies.co.uk. Also, my thanks to Andy Bryce at andybryce.com, and finally Emma Roberts at the EFTcenter.com, and that's spelt the English way, center, that's the EFTcenter.com.